Hello, welcome to Endeavors. It's me again. I didn't realize I'd be gone for almost a month. I had a bit of a rough November. I got really overworked and overstimulated and had to send myself to the hospital for a night with heart palpitations and consciously or unconsciously, I took a step back from everything, and that included this show, because at some point, I needed to put myself first, and November, December being a slower time of year for a lot of things, the timing just happened when it happened. But I'm back, and I will be doing scattered shows throughout the rest of the year, and then hope to return to full strength, or at the very least, one show a week in the new year. So, my guests today will be the band Mono Whales. I'll have two members of that band, Sally Shar and Jordan Sercosta. And as well, I'm airing an old interview that I did back in 2015, I think, 2015 or 2016, with Vince Dietrich of Spirit of the West, in honor of the recent passing of that group's lead singer, John Mann. That's all coming up on Endeavors. Back in October, the Toronto-based band Mono Whales released a new music video for their catchy new single, RWLYD, Really Wanna Let You Down. It was their first single in over a year. It debuted at number 38 on the BDS Canada Modern Rock chart and received airplay on Indie 88, Sirius XM The Verge, The Zone Victoria, X92.9 Calgary, X107 Red Deer, 106.7 The Drive Red Deer, Live 88.5 Ottawa, CBC, Stingray Rock Alternative, and College Radio. In order to realize their vision for RWLYD, a song that encapsulates the feeling of relief and empowerment from pushing back, the band brought together the same team behind their popular videos Take It Back, Real Love, and Let It Go. As lead vocalist Sally Shar says about the concept, the playground scenes play off the image we use as the single cover. Here we are submissive to the external forces mandating that we look and act a certain way in order to make it. We feel beat up and complacent while decked out in a typical Instagram-worthy outfit. We're hanging upside down and in uncomfortable positions, appearing like rag dolls to represent our complacency. They also recently completed a tour that started October 15th in Winnipeg and saw them go through Saskatoon, Red Deer, Calgary, Edmonton, Kelowna, Victoria, Vancouver, Waterloo, Toronto, London, Windsor, St. Catharines, Hamilton. Today they are in Montreal, and then next week we'll see them in Kingston and then wrap up in Ottawa. They are currently working with producer Ryan Worsley on some new tunes, and more details will be announced when the time have comes. This is my conversation with Sally Shar and Jordan Sercosta of the band Mono Whales. Jordan Zerkasta, Sally Shar, hello. Welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
So, Mono Whales just released a new single. Really Wanna Let You Down, RWLYD. And I know you sort of talk about the feeling of relief and empowerment from pushing back, but do you remember where this song kind of started from for you as a band?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, the actual day it came to us was just the day Zach and I, like my guitarist and I, were spending just trying to write some new songs. And we were feeling pretty bummed out. It was right around the time we were, like, finishing up our last EP, Control Freak. And even though that was, like, a super exciting thing to be doing, like, the feeling in the band was, like, it was just kind of bummed out. Like, people were sort of questioning, like, our way forward in the music industry and stuff like that. So Zach ended up showing me this melody he had come up with, and I just ended up writing a bunch of lyrics. And we were working together on this thing that ended up being a song about, you know, feeling a little bit disenfranchised and wanting to write something that was like a bit of an anthem to not living up to the expectations we felt that were either being placed on us by other people or by ourselves. So yeah, it ended up being a song about letting people down, but in a good way, in a way that's good for you at least.
You know, how do you think something like conflict or, you know, certain negativity, how can that fuel you as artists and as songwriters?
I mean, any emotion is good fuel for creation, but I think we've all found that, like, it's sometimes easier to spin negative emotions into creativity. Like, they kind of have a motivating effect on us. And any time that we've been faced with adversity as a group, we tend to, like, rally together to like, best that thing, to, like, you know, get past that obstacle. I'm not sure if it's just because we're a bunch of very contrarian, kind of antagonistic people who just, like, you know, thrive on a bit of adversity, but, you know, I guess that's just who we are.
And I know your music video for it sort of plays with those concepts as well. I know a lot of it is in black and white. What went into that decision?
I don't think any of it was in black and white, actually.
It says second and something. Sorry, there was just something in the press release here that said the second and third worlds are highlighted through the duality of the black and white scenes.
Yeah. There's, like, it's more like what we're wearing.
Yeah, there's like a white scene and a black scene. It's not black and white, but yeah, it's kind of the duality of, like, good or evil, or a positive and negative thing, and breaking through on both of those sides and coming out of that and like feeling positive, whether it is in a good or a bad place.
And yet at the end, you do like to remind everybody that it does become, it is, you know, a dancey, catchy anthem.
Yeah, we still like to have fun. And we still, you know, in our videos, to everything we do, like, although some things might feel really intense or serious, or these, you know, we're going through a dark time, it doesn't mean that we don't want to have positive vibes and show that we're having a good time, and that you can still have joy even through those bad times.
I know the song, when it was released last month, I believe it premiered at number 38, and it's had a lot of airplay. How have you found the reception to this single has been?
It's been extremely positive so far. Yeah, it's been, you know, climbing the charts at radio. I think we're at number 26 right now. People have been streaming the song a lot, watching the video and stuff like that. Like, the response online has been awesome. you know, we are really connected with our fans over social media, so we actually get a lot of personal messages from people that we appreciate expressing. They're like, you know, just saying that they really got into the music or that it meant something to them. So yeah, like we're really happy with the way this one rolled out, and I don't think it's done just yet. So we're gonna see where it goes from here.
Just because this song feels so connected to us in our personal lives, to see it doing well with both just like people and in, you know, climbing the charts, that to us is like an amazing thing, because we just put out something that was just literally the expression of how we felt.
As a band, how would you describe your overall creative process, your overall writing process?
It's really varied, because we collaborate a lot. Like, songs will come from different places, and usually it's one person coming in with like a lyrical and melodic idea. Like, Zach tends to come in with like more like musical ideas, although he writes lyrics and melodies too. He brings in a lot of like backing tracks and stuff like that. Like, I know that for me, I really like writing melodies and lyrics. Sally's in that camp too. Like, we work together a lot on doing that sort of thing. And like, but it really does change song to song. Mm-hmm. Like, Really Want to Let You Down started off as like a song that Zach and I were writing. And then when we brought Sally and Holly into the fold, it took on some other dimensions and new parts were introduced and stuff like that. But we have other songs, you know, on our last record that, you know, the majority of the song was just written by Holly, or, you know, Sally bringing an idea forward that like we worked together on, like Let It Go, for example. Like, there's all sorts of different ways that the songs come together.
We kind of like the freedom of it not having to be one creative process. I think it allows us to make lots of different types of stuff and feel, like not constricted doing it.
What I find interesting is that it's rare in bands that I've talked to that you have all four members or all members of the band contributing creatively. What do you think that does, not only to your overall sound, but also to your cohesion as a working group?
I mean, there's positive and negative aspects to it, you know what I mean? Like, on one hand, it makes things take a lot longer sometimes, and sometimes it means there's less cohesion overall because everything's being pulled in the different directions, like pulled towards the tastes of four, you know, very different people. But on the other hand, I think it means there's four people overseeing the quality of the stuff that we're making. So, you know, what might be good enough for one person isn't good enough for someone else, so we're always striving to make things better and better and better. Like, we're all very creative people. We all have very personal tastes and strongly held opinions. So, yeah, you take the good with the bad with a collaborative situation, but it's all we've ever really known in this band, and we're just happy to let it do its thing.
And we try to get better at it. We do get better as we go along. Like, it was much harder in the beginning, but I think now that we get to know each other more creatively, it makes it easy. Not to mention that, like, it's kind of sometimes nice to be like, hey, I really can't get a second verse to this lyric or a melody, and then you have three other people working on it. It's kind of a relief to have a team working on something with you that you, like, for the greater goal of making something good.
How different do you find a song changes from when you first conceptualize it and write it down to when you actually go into the studio and record it?
It's pretty much unrecognizable by the end. Like, usually, but it's often because we bring in songs that aren't fully formed. Like, sometimes they are. Like Real Love, for example, a single off our last record. That didn't change that much between, it, like, Zach kind of presenting an idea to the band and, like, what ended up on the record. It was fairly consistent with the vision he had, but, like, you know, Really Want to Let You Down went from, like, a guitar demo with me singing on it to, like, this fully fleshed out synthy thing with melodies that Sally contributed and all of this, you know. It brought so much more life to what that song was. So, again, like, it's always different. But yeah, they go through a lot of changes along the way.
And how did you guys get hooked up with ALP? Because I know he helped produce your last EP.
Yeah, Al was, he produced the first Death From Above 1979 record. We're huge, huge DFA fans.
He's also in Mastercraft, and I'm a huge Mastercraft player.
Yeah, so when we were looking for producers, and, we had talked to a few different people, we were like, you know what, why not just reach out to Al and see if he wants to do something? And we were kind of surprised when he got back to us and he was willing to do the work, so we linked up with him and made that record.
Mm-hmm. That was a really interesting record working with him, though, because I think he really helped take us out of something that our norm of what we're used to working as a band and really putting us in a place where we have to think about things in a different perspective. And his style is much more raw, and that's why Control Freak turned out the way it did. I think we're really happy with it. Without his contribution, I think it would have been a lot different.
For you as artists, how do you know when you found the right producer? What do you want to see from somebody who's collaborating with you in that way?
To be honest, I don't know if we ever have or ever will find the right producer. It's like everyone's going to bring something different to the table. Everyone is in their style, and what they do brings certain things out of our music. Like, you know, it's not necessarily about just finding that person who's going to be the producer. It's about, as we grow as artists, you know, introducing people into the mix that are going to, challenge us and pull different things out of us. And then we can have that experience and then take that and move on to the next one and just continue growing. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe that'll change
over time. If we find a person that want to, then maybe. But at this point, I feel like it's kind of like taking different courses with different teachers and, learning from, it's fun to work with someone new and learn from their experience and grow and continue to do it with different people that way.
And I know currently you're working on some new material with producer Ryan Worsley, who's worked with Dear Rouge. Can you tell us anything about what we might be seeing from Mono Whales in the future?
Yeah, we're actually we're upstairs in the studio right
now. Yeah, Ryan's downstairs working with Zach and Holly on some parts, but we ducked out to chat with you.
Well, I appreciate
of course. It's been great so far. We really like working with Ryan. We really like Echo Plant Studios. It's a beautiful space, and, you know, we feel like we're getting some really good work done here.
Different style. We've never locked in and lived somewhere. We live at the studio for these 2 weeks in BC, so we've really usually we kind of go to the same studios in Toronto, and we have our thing that we do with the people that we love, but we really wanted to get out of our comfort zone and try something completely different. So we went all the way across the country. We were on tour anyways, but just wanted to stay out here and have a different perspective with different people and see what we can come up with. And it's been a great experience. And like I said, we like to challenge ourselves and not do the kind of same thing every time.
And as far as what you can expect to hear, it's going to be more along the lines of what Really Want to Let You Down is all about, because Ryan produced that track as well. It's going to be a shinier, more modern, more bombastic lens kind of put over our music. Something that's we feel is taking things to a different level, and we're working in ways we've never really worked before, trying out a lot of new things. So, I mean, we hope people like it.
And we're hoping that we're better songwriters and better musicians as we go along as well, and we feel really strongly about this material. We feel it's the best stuff that we're going to put out, so we're excited to put it out.
How does something like this affect your momentum? Because you were out west touring, you were in Victoria and Vancouver, and now you're taking a break to record before you come back out east to do some more touring.
It's pretty sick. What's nice about it is we got to, in the past, often what happens is you work on a bunch of songs and then you, in your rehearsal space or whatever, and then you go into the studio and you lay them down. Whereas, we've never had the opportunity to do this, which is play a bunch of shows, pretty much back to back, and then jump in the studio and lay everything down when it's really fresh and we've been road testing that material and playing it night after night, it takes on a whole different perspective when you do get in the studio, because you're fresh and you're warmed up from playing all of those songs. And then we get to take all the changes we've made in those songs and work them back into the set and then play them all across Ontario, you know, when they're really fresh and exciting. So this is, I think it's a really awesome thing. And we feel, you know, really lucky to have the opportunity to work this way.
Yeah, as a group of people, I think we like to change it up. And so this, like, I don't know, for me and Zach, I would say we're really hardcore about being road warriors and, like, playing shows and doing that night after night. But Jordan and Holly are a bit more of, like, a homebody, consistent type person. So this really helps them to be in the studio. So it's fun to go, like, that, like, hot and cold, like, back and forth between that thing. And I feel like we get bored really easily, maybe, as a group of people. So we need things constantly changing to feel, like, fresh. At least I do. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, it's awesome. Like, I'm dying to get back on stage and play the show. Like, I've been telling the band every day, like, oh, my God, I wish we were playing a show every single night here. So it's going to be great now that these songs will be done and fleshed out. And, like, that's kind of in the bag. And coming back and just, like, killing it in Ontario, we're really looking forward to it.
Have you gotten a chance to explore it all in your off time, or is it just record, record, record?
Honestly?
I mean, it's been 6 days on, one day off since we got here. We've been, like, there's been days going by where we haven't even, like, seen the sun.
Yeah, I haven't gone outside.
You know, it's like, we do laundry and grocery shopping once a week, and it takes up a good chunk of the day. You know, we've been keeping our heads down and recording. We got to explore a lot more on the tour. Mm-hmm. We took a long, like, drive through the mountains, like through Jasper National Park and Banff, on our way out to BC. So that was really awesome. We got to see some really amazing things. But now that we're out here in Banff, it's like, it's just time to record.
Yeah. Although it's not over. We're still here for another week. Like, we're hoping to go out to and truthfully, for me, even when we have to get in the car and, like, go do something, seeing the mountains in the daytime, it's, like, enough for me. I don't know. I'm like, holy crap, that is incredibly gorgeous, and it feels like I did it, or, like, I saw the things, you know?
I guess scenically it's a little bit different to Toronto.
So it feels so different. Like, it's gorgeous, like, to go, and usually you're used to, like, skyscrapers in the distance, or not even, because, like, there's so many buildings, but here, because of the mountains, you can just, like, till the end of time, and that perspective has been really beautiful.
And I know when you come back to Toronto, you're playing at the Horseshoe again, which is somewhere you played earlier this year for Canadian Music Week. That might be the most legendary venue in all of Toronto. For you as a band, what does it mean to play a venue that has so much history like the Horseshoe does?
I mean, we've been playing the Shoe since we were, like, much younger than this, like, years and years. Like, you know, at least once a year we'd play the Shoe, and, like, we've had big shows there when we were, you know, just starting out, and, like, it just feels like a homecoming every time we get back on the stage at the Horseshoe. And, like, it is an iconic venue, but to be honest, it's, you know, I feel like it would be, like, the kind of thing you'd feel if you're, like, if your dad is a famous, like, singer or something, where you're like, oh, but it's just dad, though, you know what I mean? It's like,
I have to disagree with Jordan on this one. Like, I love the Horseshoe with a passion. I go there so often, it feels like home. Like, even a couple nights a week I try to go. And then on top of it, like, for me, it's my favorite venue to perform in Toronto that we've performed in, you know. Like, I don't know about the venues we haven't played in, but in Toronto it seems to me like it's the perfect fit for this band every time we play.
I would say all of those things. Oh, okay. I don't really know what you're disagreeing with. It's more just like, it's not like this. I don't walk in there being like, wow, the legendary horse, the Rolling Stones or something. Blah, 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 blah. It's just more just like, no, man, that's the place we play. That's like, that's our home. You know, it feels very familiar.
That's true.
At this point.
I mentioned that you had played there during CMW earlier this year. As indie artists, what does an event like CMW do for bands not only locally in Toronto and Ontario, but across this country as well?
To be honest, I think it does something for you if you're willing to put in the work to take advantage of it. I think there's some misinformation that's often that's kind of prevalent right now, where it's like playing a CMW showcase means you're making a step forward in your career, or it means someone might be out there scouting and they might see you or something like that. I don't personally believe that's true.
The chances of that are much slimmer.
It's really slim. Like, if you're going to do the work to say, wow, like, the whole Canadian music industry is in this city all at one time, and I'm going to make sure I send emails out, and I'm going to make sure to network like crazy and go out and talk to people and try to get people in to see my show, then yeah, there's, you know, it's not often that you have all of those people in one place to do something like that. But, you know, I would be careful about assuming that it's like, you know, the magic pill that's gonna create a step forward in your career.
I'm curious about how you ended up performing at the offices of Facebook Canada, and I know that got live streamed and had over 1 million views. How did that come about?
So, on most of our videos, we work with Phil Kluba of Crescent, and basically he sent them an email. Like, this is kind of something that I like to preach with anything you want to do. You know, the simple thing of, like, if you want to do something, just ask. And most people are so afraid of asking that he literally just emailed them and said, he has a live streaming company. He's like, I have this idea. I know that Facebook is investing in live streaming, and I want to put on like a live show with us, with this band. And they emailed us back and they were down, and it was that easy.
What was it like knowing that, you know, there was people in the room watching you, but you're also being live streamed at the same time? Does that change the way you perform at all?
Okay, so we've done it twice, and to be fair, the first time we did it, I was scared shitless. Like, it was really, Jordan's laughing because, like, yeah, it was really stressful, and I was terrified at that thought, because it's one thing to like perform live and it's not being filmed, or being filmed and then editing it is one thing, but for it to be like live streaming, it really freaked me out.
Not to mention, we had played a different gig like an hour and a half away earlier that day.
Yeah.
It was a very stressful day.
So yeah, that one was pretty much like, I would say like I was having like an anxiety attack before, during, and after the Facebook Live thing, if I'm going to be honest with you. But the second time around we did it, that was recent, that was chill. Like, I think we've just come a long way as like performers and understanding what it means to be live. And so we were much more prepared for that, and I loved it. I had a great time. Like, now I kind of thrive and get excited about doing live stuff rather than being afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. And if you go back and look at that first performance, which I don't necessarily recommend, you'll see that we're playing early versions of songs that ended up on Control Freak that we had only finished writing about a week or two before.
They're very fresh.
So we were taking a lot of risks with that one, which is not necessarily what you want to do in a situation like that. But live and learn.
Now you restart your Eastern Canada tour on the 21st, I believe.
Yeah,
in Waterloo, and then you go to Toronto, London, Windsor, and then up north. What are you looking forward to most about this part of the tour in Ontario and Quebec?
Toronto's the hometown show, man. Like, we are dying to play Toronto again. We don't get to do it that often. Like, CMW back in May was the last like real Toronto show we got to play, and prior to that, it was in January. You know, like, we don't get to have those big hometown love fests as often as we'd like. So we're super stoked for that. But we're also very excited to play Ottawa, because we have a really supportive fan base out in Ottawa.
Playing Ottawa.
And Montreal as well. Not to say anything bad about the other places, it's just we've been to and from Ottawa a lot. Whereas, like, you know, we only played Windsor once, so we're really excited to get back and work with Sean again because he's a great promoter. And, like, you know, we're excited to play all these places, but we're still kind of just introducing ourselves to people in those cities.
Mm-hmm.
But Ottawa and Montreal have been with us for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change your mindset at all? Like, when you go and play a show, knowing that you'll have, you know, good friends or perhaps family members out there, as opposed to just playing for fans?
We love just playing for fans.
Yeah.
Like,
I prefer that. Honestly, I am way more, like, nervous playing to family and friends
mm-hmm.
than I am to fans. I way rather play to fans.
Same. Or I'd rather play to a room of people who didn't even know we were playing that night or don't know us at all. Just because it's a blank slate and you get to do your thing and, you know, the impression you make, it just is what it is. And, you know, people can take it or leave it. But, you know, there's so much expectation with like family and friends, you know what I mean? When they come to see you and like, we love playing to them. We love the support we get from them, but, it's just a different vibe.
So I know, you are working on new material now, out west in Vancouver. Do you have a deadline, an end date, a finish line for when the new material will be released and compiled, or are you still figuring all that out logistically?
Nothing that we've announced yet, but I can tell you that there will be a new single early 2020 and a record coming out sometime during the new year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we haven't announced anything just yet.
We're pretty active on our socials, so we like to keep everyone up to date with everything we're doing.
Yeah, when we know, you'll know.
All right. Well, the new single is Really Wanna Let You Down, and Mono Wales will be here in Toronto on November the 22nd at the Horseshoe Tavern. If you're from out of town, they'll also be in Hamilton at the Casbah on the 29th and December the 8th in Ottawa at the Elgin. Thanks, Sally Jordan. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having us.
Alrighty, have a good day. Enjoy recording.
Will do. Take care.
Cheers.
That was my conversation with Sally Shar and Jordan Siracosta of the band Mono Wales. In 2015, after the late John Mann was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's, Spirit of the West decided to call it a career. And they embarked on a tour that saw them play their final two shows in Vancouver. I got to speak with the band's drummer and manager, Vince Dietrich, about John, Spirit of the West, their long career, and where they perceive themselves in the zeitgeist of Canadian culture. John Mann passed away 2 weeks ago, so I thought we would air this interview in his memory. Here is my conversation with Vince Dietrich. Vince Dietrich, hello, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's a bit of an end of an era in Canadian music. You guys, Spirit of the West, are playing a couple of final shows in Vancouver at the end of the month here. I suppose that John's health had something to do with this decision. But when did you guys decide that now what was the time to wrap this up?
I think we slowly evolved to that decision over the last year. Because, yes, the trigger is John's Alzheimer's. There's some other health issues, too, but happily they're ones that can be medically adjusted, contained, fixed. But they are very serious.
What was it like for you guys as a group when John first came to you and told you guys that he had these health problems?
Well, because we're such a close-knit family, we knew that there was something not quite right, but we weren't sure what it was. And this dates back some time. But once the diagnosis happened, and that took a long time to come down, because obviously a doctor doesn't want to just glibly throw out the possibility of Alzheimer's without absolutely being sure. So once he actually said, it's official, this is the diagnosis, we had some mental preparation coming up to it. Not a lot, though. It was still a very shocking thing, and I was overcome with dread for the first couple of days, that's for sure.
You know, it seems like in the last few years, you know, even before John's health, you know, you've become a manager. You've become somewhat of a leader in the band. How has being in that position maybe helped you get through this?
Well, that's an interesting question. No one's asked me that before, but it's spot on. I'm required to take whatever's thrown at me and digest it into little parcels for everybody else to swallow. And the process of doing that allows me to get my head around it. You know, be it good news or bad news.
And I mean, given the fact that you guys were so close, that you know you'd already had that bond because you had been together for so long, I guess, did that make it easier for you guys to grieve collectively, or whatever term you want to use?
Well, I guess you could call it grieving, and if indeed it is grieving, it began a while ago, and it's going to keep on going for a long, long time, because not only do we lose, you know, this part of our career, you know, the performance part of our career, but we lose connection with our brother. You know, it's a very profound loss.
What do you think, Spirit of the West, and to a certain extent, John Mann, has meant to the music community, not only here in Vancouver, but also across Canada?
Well, I don't know if I'm in the position to actually see us from outside of ourselves, but I'm told that we've gone from being a bunch of sweaty upstarts to, they call us a legendary band. So if we're legendary, then I guess we've done something worthy of legend. But what I can say is that we have worked every single show without lying to you or pumping this up. We have never gone on stage and phoned it in, never once. We worked our asses off, and we didn't use pyrotechnics or fancy light shows. We just worked. And we tried to use the maximum amount of communication and charm, skill, just all the things that you learn through decades and decades of doing this. We tried to apply it all every night to the greatest level of excellence that we could manage, and some nights were hard because we were exhausted or tired or sick or out of practice, or you know, so many factors, but it's been an honor. It's been a real honor to do this.
You mentioned just before we started here that, you know, you've got your grandkids with you. You're busy being a human being outside of the music. And I'm curious, like, you know, since having kids and now grandkids and having that outside life, how has that affected you creatively, and has it brought a sense of balance to your life?
Well, luckily, in the Spirit of the West, we're a family of musicians who always put family first, which has been a blessing and a curse. Certainly, we could have pushed harder and harder and harder and done all sorts of career things that went further than what we achieved, but we were never willing to chase fame at the risk of our families. We just wouldn't do it. And so we have these amazing families who've stuck with us through thick and thin, and I'm happy to announce that I'm the first grandfather in the band, and I have my little grandson Oliver in my arms as I speak to you, and he's dead asleep happily because he was a little vocal a few minutes ago. And it's just always been about family, you know. for example, my younger son, his middle name is Jeffrey, after Jeffrey Kelly, and you know, there are other names named after band members. It's a just such a tight knit little community.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about you know pyrotechnics and all sort of some of the bigger aspects that come with performance. Now you guys have managed to stay smaller, and I wanted to get your thoughts about how you've seen music evolve over the last couple of decades. You know, since you guys first started out, and what do you think your thoughts on that are?
Well, I have many opinions, but some of them might really jar. But I think overall, my sense as a kind of as a musicologist, I see digital technology allowing people to just lift tones and samples, all phrases from older stuff. They've used what was being done in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s to about 1995 or so as a mine, and they've been mining parts from it and recombining it. And it becomes less performance and more mosaic, audio mosaic, which is completely legitimate and very interesting, but it definitely changes the tenor of everything, because these songs oftentimes are being generated by the software, and you grow to love them as you build them in the form of software and waveforms. So it's not the same as a bunch of people sitting around with guitars and maybe a drum or a tambourine and making a song from scratch. It's a different animal. It's equally valid. It's just different.
But I also know that at least in recent years, technology has helped out you guys in your performances. John's been using, is it some sort of iPad when he's performing?
Oh, yeah. As far as that's concerned, of course, we always embrace technology to make things easier and faster and smoother. John does have to use the iPad as a teleprompter, which is wonderful, because you know, a few years ago we wouldn't have been able to use something like that. We literally would have had to have a teleprompter, which is a big piece of equipment, and it's unwieldy and complicated. And you know, just to have an iPad with triggered by a foot pedal for page turns is a minor miracle, but it's really helped us.
So you guys are playing your final two shows at the Commodore, which seems only fitting, such a legendary venue for such a legendary band.
It's actually our final three shows.
Final 14, three shows.
15, 16.
Excuse me. What does the Commodore mean to you? Not only you guys as a band, but what do you think it's meant to the Vancouver music scene as a whole?
Oh, I think that for live musicians, when people think of Vancouver, they think of the Commodore, you know. It's just sort of it's the pulse of Vancouver. Everybody's played there, for heaven's sakes. You know, a few of them become so popular that they can fill up hockey rinks and what have you, but for the most part, people end up at the Commodore. It's a beautiful place to dance and have a drink, and the sight lines are tremendous, and it sounds good, and the house crew there is par excellence, better than anywhere else, and for us, it's home ice.
When you guys walk off the stage that final time on the 16th, how emotional do you think it's going to be for you all?
Oh, God, I'm just about breaking up just thinking about it, so I mean, really, as I said, you know, let me put it to you this way. Everyone in the band has spent more than half their life in the band. So when that goes away, it is a major, major component of our life. We're watching the door close on a major component of our lives.
Are you going to... it's going to be difficult, but are you going to enjoy being a spectator in all the great music that Vancouver has to offer?
Oh, sure. I always enjoy that. And I find that when I don't have to participate in it, I can enjoy it more because I worry about nuts and bolts and all those other things. When you're actually playing, you worry about so much detail and the aggravation of travel and all those things. If you can just listen to a great band, that's one of the great pleasures in life, isn't it?
Who are maybe some up and coming bands that you have your eye on right now, or that you would encourage people to perhaps check out?
Well, I think there are probably a bunch, and one group that I'm actually very interested in right now is a Victoria-based group called Carmana. They've got something there.
Yes.
And I'm also very, very delighted with Jesse Roper. He's not only a very talented man, but he is a tremendous gentleman.
What do you want, or how do you want people to remember Spirit of the West? What would you want your legacy to be, so to speak?
I hope you'll remember us as really solid guys who did the country proud.
Well, you definitely did. Vince Dietrich, thank you so much for taking the time out today. I know it's been a bit emotional this last little while, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was nice speaking with you, and thank you very much.
Alrighty, have a good day. Cheers.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was my conversation with Vince Dietrich from Spirit of the West back in 2015 in honor of the recently departed John Mann. That does it for me today. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Artists like to have a lot of sex.